The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
Well, welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show EDU edition, where today we're going to talk about excess IRA contributions. This will be a multi-part series, most likely, where today we're going to talk about how these excess IRA contributions occur. In a future episode, likely the very next episode, we'll discuss how you fix this problem because it is problematic. So thank you, everybody, for joining us today on the EDU show. For those of you unaware, we also have a Q&A show, which is dedicated to answering questions that have been sent to us via email, through our website, phone calls, those sorts of things. So today, I don't believe this topic happens to be a result of a question. A lot of our EDU shows are, but the EDU show, for those of you who don't know, is designed to dig a little deeper into one topic rather than cover just simple Q&As that we receive by email. So we're going to dive a little deeper than normal into excess IRA contributions.
Yeah, this came about because Joe had asked me to work on some blog articles for our newsletter. Mm-hmm. For those of you who don't know, for you iTunians who don't know, we do offer a newsletter. Comes out every quarter. No, every month. Comes out every month, and it really contains summaries of our podcast with links to them, so you'll know what we covered on the podcast. It contains information on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com blog post, which unfortunately Chris hasn't had a chance to contribute to lately. And then it contains some specially written articles that someone in the office will generally come out with. So Joe, who does a lot of this for us, asked me to provide for her a brief blog article. And hours later, and she saw it, she said, "My God, this could be four separate blogs." And it was this, excess IRA contributions, how they happen, how to fix them, what happens if you fix them before October 15th, after October 15th. And I just, you know me, went down that rabbit hole. Mm-hmm. And she's going to turn them into three or four newsletter articles. And she suggested we do this as an EDU show.
And here we are.
And here we are. So I thought, all right, perfect. So you can also get newsletter articles. Now, not every newsletter article is going to become a separate EDU show, but this will, because I kind of took that topic and ran. But today, it's probably going to be the easiest of what is probably going to be two or three more shows on excess IRA contributions. How do they happen? A lot of people don't understand how easy it is to mistakenly get too much money in an IRA, because it seems difficult to do. How are you going to put too much in? If you're careful when you write the check, mm-hmm. how are you going to get too much in? Oh, there's many ways. And we're going to go over like six, seven, eight of them today.
Well, six, seven, or eight.
I told you, I wrote the article. I kind of went a little crazy.
Well, you have about 23 minutes to make it happen.
23 minutes?
Well, we have to do a Q&A show too.
Wow, that's going to be a short show. Maybe this will be a four-part show.
EDU light.
EDU light. Okay, so what we're going to try to cover today first, folks, is explain common ways people can get more money than they're allowed to have inside an IRA. Because the tax code and the IRS, who enforces the tax code, doesn't look too kindly on excess money going into IRAs.
Right. And be careful of your wording. You said too much money in there. There's no limit on how much you can have in there. It just all has to get in there in a allowed manner, in a legal qualified way.
Yes, I meant on contributions. So.
Yeah, so just the contributions is what we're talking about here. There is no limit on the amount you have in the IRA. If you you could amass unlimited amounts, actually.
Well, rumor had it that Mitt Romney, remember when he ran for president, mm-hmm. allegedly had $400 million in his IRA?
Well,
I don't
rumors,
know how that
yeah,
came out.
Yeah. I know. Well, the rumor started at $10 million and it just kept growing. Yeah.
Okay. But yeah, Chris is right. There's no limit on how much you can have inside your IRA. The limit is on how you get that money in. And if you do it wrong and you put too much in any given year, then the IRS is going to penalize you on that. And that's where things get a little sticky. We're going to cover that in a lot of detail on the future shows on this. But the statute of limitations is nearly unlimited on that. IRS can look back a long time, and we'll explain how they do that. The penalty accrues every year, which is 6%, plus late payment penalties. And there's another penalty they throw on top of that, accuracy-related penalty. If they feel you were just totally negligent in doing that, and the accuracy-related penalty, I believe, and don't quote me on this, but I believe is 20%. So these penalties can really add up if you put too much money in. And what we're going to talk about today is not how to fix it, because it gets really complicated there. It's how they're done. And let's look at the first way they happen. And that's simply, Chris, you contribute too much.
Right. You, through electronic transfer or writing the check, you just happen to put too much in there.
Right.
A lot of custodians, if they receive a number that... an amount that seems wrong or absurd, are going to hopefully provide some pushback so you don't just do this and they happily take it from you. But they're under no requirement.
That's the key. It is not the custodian's responsibility to monitor what you put into the IRA. You can't hold your custodian responsible.
Right.
You can't sue them. It is not their responsibility. The IRS has made that perfectly clear. Now, many IRA custodians, because there are contribution limits, and this year the limits have changed, but their $7,000 can go in if you are over the age of 50, $6,000 if you are under the age of 50, can go into an IRA or a Roth IRA or any combination of the two. It's not that you can put $6,000 or $7,000 in a traditional and $6,000 or $7,000 in a Roth. It's total between the two. But it is your responsibility, not the custodian's. And there is where the first mistakes generally get made. And how they happen is oftentimes, Chris, with multiple IRAs. You are correct if you were to go to a custodian and send them a check for $20,000 and write on it 2019 contribution. There's no guarantee, but chances are that custodian will red flag it mm-hmm. and ixnay it. They'll get a hold of you and they'll say, well, wait a minute, what's going on? The limit is for your age. Let's say it was you, Chris, you're over the age of 50. And they'll say, you're only allowed to put $7,000 in. You wrote us a check for $20,000. What's going on? Mm-hmm. But there's no guarantee that's going to happen. And if the custodian's employee that day is a new employee not paying attention, or even an older employee who's just not paying attention, and in goes that $20,000, or they just assume, they meant rollover, obviously, and we're just going to treat it as that. Maybe they just for some reason let it through because it is not their responsibility. Then the excess money is in. Another way it happens is with multiple IRAs, and you just lose count and forget. You think, I'm going to put $3,000 in this IRA, and I'm going to put another $4,000 in this Roth. Well, you put the $3,000 in first and in January, and then it's December, the end of the year, and well, not really the end of the year. You have till April 15th, but things are getting busy. It's December. It's the holidays, and you're, I got to get the rest of that money in, and you totally forgot. You already put $3,000 in a mm-hmm. traditional, and you're thinking, I'm going to put $7,000 in this Roth. I'm over the age of 50, and each custodian doesn't know.
Right.
And the dollar limits were okay, so there's no red flags. Mm-hmm. And another way it happens is you are allowed to put contributions in up till April 15th of the following year mm-hmm. for the previous year. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you miss that deadline. Sometimes you might put it in after April 15th and forget, oh, I put that in April 18th, but you think it was the 15th and you think it was a previous year, and you can start to get confused. I've seen all three of those happen. And you might be thinking, listeners, how the hell's the IRS going to know? Do you know? You know how the IRS finds out.
Oh, they know. They know everything.
They find out because your custodian has to tell them by law.
Right.
The custodian must file a document. And goodness, I can't remember. I get so many document ideas running through my head. Mm-hmm. So Google which document it is. I think it's the... I can do this. I can figure out what document that is. It's filed every May by May 30th. I have 5329 in my head, but I think it's 50... Isn't it 54 something? It's the form a custodian files to report an IRA contribution. That form is filed every May. And the reason they have the custodians file it in May, listeners, is you have until April 15th to put money into your IRA. So the custodians, the IRS says to the custodians, you must tell us by the end of May, May 31st is the deadline. You must file this form, 5429, isn't it? 5430?
I think it's 5498.
5498, that sounds right.
I think
right.
It's a 5498.
Okay. It doesn't matter what the form is, folks. Everything goes by a four-letter digit in the IRS code for some odd reason. But there is a form, 5498 is what Chris is saying.
Yeah, it's 5498.
Perfect. That must be filed by May 31st of every year. You get a copy, but you know who else gets a copy? The IRS. Mm-hmm. So if all of a sudden they start getting all of these forms, 5498 coming in from different custodians, or one big one for 20,000, and you don't report a rollover anywhere, they're tracking all this and they'll catch you. But they catch you 2 or 3 years later. It takes them a while to figure this all out.
I personally, and I'm not much of a conspiracy theory person, I'm convinced some of this stuff they intentionally wait to find to catch you,
to get you,
so that there's
penalties.
An accumulation of penalties over time, because some of this stuff, it's got to be electronic. The computer would spit it out and say, "Hey, there's a problem here." For them to take 3 years to get to it, now maybe that's my tinfoil hat talking there, but
no, you could
it just
be
seems
right.
strange.
Because when you get a letter audit on this or any other letter audit, that letter audit has tried, convicted, and sentenced you.
Right.
They've already they tell you what the problem is. They don't give you a chance to say, nope, they're wrong. They say, this is what you did. This is what we feel you did. This is what you should have done. Here's the taxes and penalties you owe. Please send it to this address. Thank you. And it's only at the end, and I jokingly say an 8-point font at the bottom, but it's not really that small a font. But at the end, they say, hey, if you dispute that, check this box and provide proof of why you dispute this. Mm-hmm. But when you first get a letter audit, it scares people.
Right.
Because it's got that official envelope with the return address of the IRS. And the letter is already the fine. Everything is there. And they lay out their case on why you owe them this money. I think that is done on purpose.
Yeah.
So most people just, oh my God, and pay that and think, please go away. Leave me. Don't audit me. But anyways, that's one way excess money can get in to your IRA is simply contributing too much by accident. The one that causes a lot of issues is a muffed up 60-day rollover. Remember, you're only allowed folks to do one 60-day rollover a year. That's how it's reported in the financial press even. So what happens, Chris? A 60-day rollover, for those who don't know, if you're a new iTunian, is when you take money out of your IRA, you can take it as cash, you can frolic in it, you can take it all as $1 bills and throw it out on your living room floor and frolic barefoot or naked through it. IRS doesn't care. They just want to make sure at the end of that 60-day period, you collect all those dollars and put it right back into your another IRA.
Or the same one.
Or the same one. Doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. You can do one per year. So everybody hears that, and what do they do? Let's just say it is November of 2019, and you do a 60-day rollover, and you have it completed by December of 2019.
Perfect.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. Then the calendar turns to 2020.
Yeah.
And you think, well, it's another year. I'm going to take that money and frolic barefoot through it again. So you take money out of your IRA in January of 2020, start frolicking in your living room through those dollars, and you get it back into an IRA by March of 2020.
Mm-hmm.
What happened?
Not perfect.
Not good.
Because you can't do that second rollover again until 365 days have gone by.
Absolutely.
So you've tried to do another rollover, but what you really did was take a distribution and then turn around and make a contribution of that amount into the IRA for some large amount, probably, because if you're going to frolic naked, you may as well do it in a giant pile.
Yeah, you're
of
not going to do it with $7,000 if you're over the age of 50.
No, you're going to get the whole thing out.
No,
probably.
Hell yeah. If I'm frolicking in dollar bills with no clothes on, it's going to be at least 50 bucks.
For sure.
But what happens with a missed rollover is exactly what we described. And you end up putting money in, and now you got another whole host of issues because it was a distribution and then an excess contribution, and it can get really messy. But failed rollovers and also Roth conversions, that can screw people, and required minimum distributions, because it all has to do with rollovers, folks. The IRS treats every conversion as a rollover.
Mm-hmm. It's a special kind of rollover.
And RMDs, required minimum distributions, also cannot be contributed to a Roth IRA. They cannot be rolled over.
Mm-hmm.
Every Roth conversion is a rollover. Keep that in mind. So here's what happens. Here's how people make more mistakes. Let's look first at required minimum distributions. Once you turn 70 and a half, the law says you must begin taking money from your IRA. You also cannot contribute to your IRA. And I should have put this one under contributing too much. You cannot contribute to an IRA after the age of 70 and a half. But also, when it comes to RMD, so many people say this, Chris, I want to take the RMD. I don't need it. Mm-hmm. I got to pay taxes on it. So I want to roll it over into my Roth IRA. I just put it in there? Because I got to pay money on a conversion anyways. Mm-hmm. If I converted money from my IRA to a Roth IRA, I got to pay taxes on that. So can't I just take the RMD? I don't need it. Put it in my Roth IRA and pay taxes on it. It sounds really nice.
Sounds reasonable.
Yeah, it's reasonable. But what does the IRS say?
Absolutely not.
Exactly. Exactly. So what the IRS says that you have to do is, beginning in the year, you take your RMD. Beginning in that year, the first dollars out of your IRA are always your RMD.
Right. And this is where people who even know the rule get in trouble, because they're thinking, oh, I'm gonna do this conversion, and then I'll also take out my RMD, but I'm going to do that later. Mm-hmm. You cannot do it that way. The IRS says, just what Jim mentioned, the first dollars out that come out up till the RMD is satisfied, all those monies that come out are considered the RMD itself. You can't say, no, these are a rollover or conversion, I'll do my RMD later in the same year. Does not work that way.
I was on one of the financial planning forums a couple of years ago, and a woman who is a planner, she wrote a post because a CPA had, I don't want to say chastise her, but corrected her, claimed that she made a mistake, because what she did, her client was over the age of 70 and a half, subject to required minimum distributions, and they did a conversion before taking his RMD. And she couldn't grasp and kept saying in her postings, what's it matter? We're going to take the required minimum distribution by the end of the year, but we did the conversion first. So she was posting that she felt the CPA was wrong. I think the gentleman had gone to a CPA and a CPA said, you did this wrong. Mm-hmm. And he went back to her. So she posted, well, I wrote and said, no, the CPA is 100% correct. Mm-hmm. And she wanted the part of the IRC code. I remember her posting that. Can you please provide me the IRC code section that references this? And I never got it for her. I could have written to Ed Slaw and he would have gotten it for me. But I just told her, I said, look, this is the rule. I don't know the section of the code. I just know the rule. The CPA is correct. You needed to take the RMD first, because when you're subject to required minimum distributions, the first dollars out of the IRA are always RMDs. RMDs cannot be converted because every conversion is a rollover and rollovers cannot be converted. That's the law. You cannot do that. And that's not what I did. We're going to take the RMD. I said, you already did. The problem is you just made an excess contribution to the Roth IRA. Your client has no job. So that money that's in there is not allowed to be in there. So you're subjecting them to a 6% penalty tax, which we'll get into in part two of this podcast. We're only going over how this happens, not how to fix it. But I told him, you're subjecting him to a 6% penalty tax. Every
year it stays in there.
Year it stays in there, and it's a tax-free account subject to taxes and penalties. But I told her, all is not lost. Undo that excess contribution. It's no problem. Just undo it. Get it out of there because it's the RMD, and RMDs cannot be rolled over. Oh, it was a hard time getting her to understand that. So back to you guys who are listening. Once required minimum distributions begin and you want to do Roth conversions, you must take the required minimum distribution first. No ifs, no ands, and no buts about it. Also, remember, when you reach 70 and a half, here's where people make a lot of mistakes, because this rule does not apply, Chris, to SEP IRAs, simple IRAs, 401ks, or Roth IRAs. It only applies to traditional IRAs. Once you reach 70 and a half, you are not allowed to contribute money to a traditional IRA. So a lot of people try to get that money in before they turn 70 and a half. And they think, I want to get this last contribution in before I turn 70 and a half. The mistake people make is beginning in the year you turn 70 and a half, January 1st of the year you turn 70 and a half, you can no longer contribute to a traditional IRA. Let's say you turn 70 and a half in December. December, you turn 70 and a half. January, you're still 69. You haven't even turned 70 and a half yet. So you are 70 well, yet.
No, you're 70 in January.
Not if you turn 70 and a half in December.
Well, you're right.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Thank you. So,
I had to think of the calendar in my head. Yeah.
So in January...
So you're thinking you can do it.
Yeah. You're still 69. And you're thinking, I got till 70 and a half. I'm not even 70 yet. And you make a full IRA contribution. You just made an excess contribution. Because beginning January 1st of the year you turn 70 and a half, you can no longer contribute to a traditional IRA. This is the rule. A lot of people don't know this. A lot of advisors don't know this. And they think, oh, no problem. My client's not 70 and a half yet. That's not the rule. 59 and a half is the rule. We talk about this all the time, Chris. The excess penalty, the 10% early withdrawal penalty, it does not go away in January of the year you turn 59 and a half. You actually have to be 183 days past your 59th birthday. But this rule begins January 1st of the year you turn 70 and a half. If you turn 70 and a half in December, that means you turn 70 in what? March? April, May, June, July, August, September? No, even later than March. When would you turn
70?
Yeah.
June.
Okay, perfect. So in January, you're still 69. In February, you're 69. In March, you're still 69. You haven't even turned 70 yet. You turn 70 in June. You turn 70 and a half in December. But you are not allowed to contribute on January 1st when you're still 69. This one is how most people get burned on it.
They're just so used to putting money in.
They put that last contribution
in. They do it in there and they're thinking, I'm not quite there yet, so I
can
put this last one in.
Even if it's a non-deductible and you're trying to do the backdoor Roth, Chris, and you put it in the traditional IRA non-deductible first and then convert it, that contribution is not allowed. So that conversion is not allowed because you're converting money that shouldn't have been put into the IRA to begin with. That's the one that nails most people. So there's the little bit of secret. That's that one thing that this show always treats. I didn't know that. Now you know. That's the way most people get burned on that one. Okay, so let's make sure I'm looking at my article that ended up becoming a brief little mini-series to make sure I got all the ones I wanted. Contributed too much, failed 60-day rollover, required minimum distributions. Oh, not enough earned income or not the right kind of earned income. This one is what we mean. You can put in, everybody knows, okay, if I'm over 50, I can put in $7,000. If I'm under 50, I can put in $6,000. Or W-2 earnings, whatever is lower.
Or self-employment.
Or self-employment.
Net of reasonable expenses.
Net of expenses. If you only made $3,000, you can't put in $6,000 or $7,000.
I usually call it, just to clarify in people's minds, instead of calling it earnings, which we always, that's the common word, I call it wages from work. That usually clarifies it for people because they're thinking, well, no, I earned interest. That's earnings. No, that's not.
You're reading my mind. You've earned
a dividend.
Yes. Because,
well, yes, that word makes sense in that sentence, but it's not the kind of earnings they're talking about. It's not wages from work.
Right, and that's what I said because I said not earning enough income or the right kind of income. Social Security does not count. Pension income does not count. Royalties, rental income, interest, dividends, doesn't count, doesn't count, doesn't count, doesn't count. Now, if you have a business set up that owns rental properties and receives rental income, and that business pays you a legitimate wage, it is that wage that allows you to contribute to an IRA, not the rental income. But if you just own some rentals, won't count. So you can have very high taxable income, Chris, but maybe not be allowed to make an IRA contribution at all because it goes by the type of income and it's only taxable wages, work you do. It is not passive income, which is what most of these other sources of income are. So you could have high taxable income and still not be allowed to put money in an IRA.
Right. Just also a little side thing that might be another ding. I didn't know that. Deferred compensation does not count as income in the year that you receive it. So you can't contribute to an IRA based on deferred comp. Some people argue, no, that's wages from work. That's money that I earned as, quote, salary. I just didn't receive it yet until later. You can't count that. Doesn't count.
Absolutely. Okay. Let's make sure I have that. Oh, the opposite. Earning too much.
Oh, yeah. Not earning enough and earning too much. Those are opposite.
Earning too much, though, only applies to Roth IRAs. Traditional IRAs have no earnings limit. That's why the whole backdoor Roth strategy even works. If you make too much money to put money in a Roth, you just contribute to a non-deductible IRA. But Roth IRAs have earnings limits. And sometimes people put money in a Roth early in the year. The end of the year, They get a big bonus. They exceeded the income limits. They totally forget, and the money stays in there. Then the IRS gets the 5498. The IRS is also looking at your tax return and saying, well, wait a minute. This person made a hell of a lot of money, and the custodian is telling me they put money in. And you start to have a problem. So you have to watch out earning too much. And then the final one before we wrap up today's show, inherited IRAs. And that can cause problem. Non-spouse beneficiaries. Mm-hmm. Non-spouse beneficiaries can have a problem. And the problem is this. First, what if you inherited an IRA from your parents? And you open up a properly titled inherited IRA, and you're still working. And let's just say you inherited $1 million from your parents, and you're still working. And you think, wow, I can contribute to an IRA and lower my taxes. And you go ahead and take the $7,000 because you're over the age of 50, $6,000 if you're under the age of 50, and you figure, why should I go open up an IRA? I get this inherited IRA over there. I'm going to put that money in and deduct it on my taxes, lower my taxes. What do you think just happened?
Whole lot of alarm bells, because that's not your IRA, so you can't make contributions to it.
Exactly.
Might have your name on it as a beneficiary, but it is actually not your IRA by law and rule.
Exactly. So you just made an excess contribution of $7,000 because you were not allowed to put money into that IRA. But if you want to add this to your list, this will be your third. I didn't know that. Second one for me. Third one in total. It actually blows up and it is totally unfixable. The inherited IRA is deemed immediately distributed because the IRS says you're a non-spouse beneficiary and you treated it as your own. Only a spouse can do that. Not a non-spouse, and the entire IRA is taxable. Do not
make a
contribution.
Especially you got $1 million in your example. Suddenly that's $1 million of income that year.
Million taxable.
Wow.
A lot of people don't know that. Don't do it. Trust me, don't try this at home. It cannot be fixed. Now you can apply for a private letter ruling if it was an advisor error. My advisor told me to put it in. Or if it was a custodial error, I have my own IRA there. I had an inherited IRA there. I wanted them to put it in my own. They put it in the inherited. And you have proof of that. You filled in the paperwork correctly, and the custodian made an error. You'll get away with it. You'll be okay. You'll probably have to file a private letter ruling, which costs $20,000. But you will probably be exempt from blowing up that IRA. But if you made the error, you're in trouble. And as we said, it is not the custodian's responsibility to make sure you are not putting money into an account that cannot accept it. So if you do it, you can't hold the custodian liable, Chris, and say, you took this money and put it in. You guys should have known better. That won't work. What if you did another thing? What if you took that IRA? How do I want to explain this one? Let me look at what I wrote. I want to make sure I explain this one right.
Are you trying to decipher your own handwriting?
Yeah. Okay,
this, that's what you get for
part,
taking notes.
This part is interesting. And I had to go back to my Ed Slot book to make sure I got this part right. So follow our logic. If the non-spouse beneficiary contributes to their inherited IRA, that single act will disqualify the entire inherited IRA and cause it to be immediately taxable, and there is no fix, okay? But what if a non-spouse beneficiary has an inherited IRA and combines it, the inherited IRA combines it with their own existing IRA.
Treating it like a spouse could.
treating it like a spouse could. What would happen there, you think?
I'm racking my brain now. You have the advantage of having taken notes on this ahead of time. you try to roll it in. Well, the whole inherited IRA is going to be considered distributed.
Absolutely.
And it's a gigantic excess contribution.
Absolutely.
Into your own.
That's what we're trying to get at, because this whole topic was on excess contributions. What happens if you move? It doesn't blow your IRA up. Let's just say you had $1 million IRA that was yours, and you had a $10,000 inherited IRA, and you moved the $10,000 inherited IRA into your IRA. It does not blow up your IRA. It becomes an excess contribution to your IRA and an immediate distribution of the inherited IRA. Whereas in my other example, you inherited $1 million IRA. And you contributed.
You tried to put money in.
Just $7,000 into it. Or rolled an existing IRA of $10,000 into it.
Blows it up.
Blows the entire $1 million inherited IRA up, because the IRS says you just treated the IRA as your own. You're a non-spouse beneficiary. You're not allowed to do that. It is a full distribution, not fixable. But in the other example, where you have your own $1 million IRA and you mistakenly roll an inherited IRA into it, the entire value of the inherited IRA is immediately taxable to you, and the money put into, the money that was rolled into your IRA, is an excess contribution.
Which is going to cause, it doesn't blow it up, but it causes its own issues, that 6% penalty. And
correct. There's going to be penalties. Then we're going to go over a lot of this on the next show, but it's kind of unique in this case. That's why I wanted to put this one in. Almost very similar facts. Mm-hmm. But one is a total, oh my God, and the other is, well, that's not too bad, I can fix it. Unless you had a $10,000 IRA and $1 million inherited IRA, and you moved the inherited IRA into your IRA, it's an immediate distribution as well.
And 6% on the million, because you put it in. That's even worse than just taking the distribution.
Yeah, that's a $60,000 a year penalty tax every year it took you to figure out you shouldn't have done that. So you got to really be careful with inherited IRAs. I always say, don't start moving them around. Leave it. Now, you don't have to leave it at the custodian you inherited it from if you don't like the custodian. But don't combine it with anything. The only IRAs that can be combined with an inherited IRA is another inherited IRA from the same decedent.
Right.
You cannot take an inherited IRA from mom and combine it with an inherited IRA from dad. That will not work. That'll actually blow up both inherited IRAs. The first one is a distribution. Let's say you moved mom's into dad's. Mom's would be considered a complete distribution. Dad's would be blown up because the IRS would say you just made a contribution to it. You treated it as your own. You weren't allowed to do that. And it blows up dad's too. So you just killed both.
Yep.
Don't start willy-nilly moving inherited IRAs around. Don't try this at home, as we always say. Anyways, I wanted to lay the groundwork. This is a very lighthearted, not a very deep EDU topic today, although we did probably share three things most people didn't know. Don't ask me what they were. I can't remember all three. But we did hopefully teach you something, those little, wow, I never knew that, little bit. But now we're going to teach you in the next show, or probably the next two shows, actually, because you know how Chris goes on and on and on and on. We are going to explain how to fix when you make an excess contribution. It is not, this will be a little teaser, it is not as easy as simply taking a distribution. Oops, I put $3,000 too much in, and then calling up the IRA custodian. Yeah, can you send me $3,000 from my IRA? That does not fix an excess contribution.
Right. Wouldn't that be nice?
You know, it would be nice if that would
nice
fix
and simple.
It, but it doesn't.
Nope.
And we'll get into that on the next show.
Perfect. So we want to remind everybody that we are living, breathing, practicing financial planners in the Northern Colorado area who help clients throughout the country. If you are interested in dealing with us, I guess that's how about dealing working with us? You're already dealing with us by listening to the show.
Yeah, I'll deal with those guys.
If you're interested in working with us, feel free to schedule a what we call a coffee and a second opinion, which is just an introductory meeting. It's free. We'll chat with you about what services we provide, what we can do to help you clarify your retirement situation. And if it sounds like something that will benefit you, then we can proceed. If not, then we'll hopefully direct you towards someone who can help you with your particular issues. But you can do that right on our website, jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. All right, on there you can schedule it directly yourself, or there's contact information on there if you'd like the more traditional method of calling in to Laura at the front desk, and she can help schedule that meeting for you. So we'll be back with you next week with more on excess IRA contributions, more specifically how the heck you can fix them if that if that happens to you.
Excellent.
See everybody next week.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested indirectly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier and Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier and Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.